8:30 a.m. KSDP. This is Meet the People. I'm Kels Hetherington. My guest this morning is John Lang of the Alaskan Wet Dog Race. Well, John, thanks for joining me on the show, and tell us about yourself and what is the Alaskan Wet Dog Race.
Hi, Kel. Thanks for having me. Well, my name's obviously John Lang, and I live in Alaska. I've been up here for 17 years. I really like to ride my watercrafts, and I wanted to be able to break the thought that watercrafts were not usable for anything other than a thrill craft on a lake. And in order to do that, I had this extreme idea to create an event that would open people's eyes to the actual possibility that a watercraft of what it can do. And to match the extreme race culture that Alaska has, along with like the Iron Dog, which is a 2,000-mile snow machine race, or the Iditarod, the 1,100-mile sled dog race, I thought it'd be nice to have an event based in the summer that would be like a summer-based extreme event. And henceforth, I came up with the idea for the Alaskan Wet Dog Race, which is a 2,000-mile personal watercraft race. This would be the proposal right now is for the proposed race course would be to start in Whittier, Alaska, and travel through Prince William Sound and go Whittier, Valdez, Cordova, Chenega, and Seward for the checkpoints. Mm-hmm. From Seward, then, the proposed course would go around the Kenai Peninsula, back up to Port Graham, Anchor Point, and Kenai. From there, it would shoot back down through Cook Inlet, back to Williamsport. From Williamsport, it would shoot down to through the Barren Islands, to the top, to the south end of Shuyak Island, which would be Port Williams, and then from Port Williams on to Kodiak. From Kodiak, you would skirt the outside of Kodiak down to Old Harbor and over to Alitak. And from Alitak, the proposal would be to shoot across the Shelikof Straits into Chignik. From Chignik, we would continue south from Chignik to Perryville, Sandpoint, King Cove, Cold Bay, and then around to False Pass. And at False Pass, we would shoot through and go to the into the Bering Sea and to Bristol Bay and cruise north and go through Port Moeller, Port Hyden, Igigik, Naknek, and from Naknek we would then travel up the Kwijak River to Igiagik, and from Igiagik we would then go across Iliamna Lake, and the proposal right now is to end the race at Lake Iliamna, or at the city of Iliamna, or the village of Iliamna, which gives us about a 2,052-mile proposed course for the race.
Which has got to be the longest race of its kind.
In all my research, I haven't found anything longer. The longest I have been able to come up with so far has been the Jet Raid in South America, put on by Bruno Cassia. And it's a 1,000-kilometer race, which is somewhere around 630 miles, if I remember correctly. It's a 9-day event that they have down there.
Now, you're going to encounter some pretty tough water as you go across this race, either as a contestant or even as an official who's following the race in some sort of a chase boat. A few weeks ago, you guys were trying to do parts of this race, just kind of a test run, and you were supposed to come into Sandpoint. I don't think you ever did.
We unfortunately ran out of time. We had several weather delays. We had a couple mechanical breakdowns along the way where it delayed us a few days. But the biggest portion of our delays was all weather contingent, where we had made it to Wide Bay from Larsen Bay down to Wide Bay, and we got weathered in. We ran into some 50, 60-mile-an-hour winds. It seemed like the perfect storm that showed up, and it held there for... well, we were camped out in Wide Bay for 4 days, and the forecast was for it not to end for another 4 days. So we got on our support boat, left our watercrafts in Wide Bay with the intention that we would come back to them and pick them up and continue on. But as it turned out, the weather held on. By the time we could get back down there and pick them up, the time schedule for everybody's being able to get back home and get back to their normal jobs, we just ran out of time. So we went down and recovered our crafts and then just went back to Anchorage. But it is our full intention to be able to complete that paving the way course, is what we call it, paving the way, where we were exploring the course and stopping at all these different points. We're going to do everything we can. We're going to reschedule and regroup and try to make do it before the summer's out to be able to come through those points and still visit all those sites.
It'll be fun to see you in Sand Point. Now, your website says, simply put, the Alaskan Wet Dog Race is going to be the world's longest personal watercraft endurance race, and the goal is to have the largest prize payout in watercrafting history. Is that why someone would want to go through this harrowing experience, because there's so much money to win?
I believe that would be one of the major drawing points. I've talked to a lot of other people that said you wouldn't need that. They think that you would get enough just from the prestige of having won or even raced in an event like the Alaskan Wet Dog Race would be enough to draw them to Alaska. But in my humble opinion, I believe that there's a huge expense and risk that you take to partake in an event like this. And as such, there should be a sizable reward in order to compensate for it. So we are proposing with that. And I have, according to my business plan that I have laid out so far, based on the fact if we get 500 teams that will race in this event, there's no reason we cannot offer a purse with $2 million going to the first-place team.
Wow, that is huge. What kind of people are getting in touch with you after reading about this race or the plans for the race in the media or on your website?
I'm sorry, Kel, what kind of people?
Yeah, what sorts of folks are you hearing from? Are they people in Alaska? Are they folks in the lower 48?
We actually have people from all over the world that have expressed an interest in this event. This is not just a local little event that's going to happen. We've already got people that have said once this is going, they're coming from South America, from Athens, Greece, from Spain, Portugal, Uruguay. All these different countries around the world have really shown an extreme interest in partaking in this event.
Now, there is
everybody was watching us. When we had our transponders and the way it was coming, we actually had twice as many people watching us as watch the Baja 500 race in Mexico.
That's incredible. That's fantastic. And this is sounding like it's going to be another one of those Alaskan events that gets national media attention. Now, there is going to be an entry fee. How much is that going to be, and what does the cost to enter the race cover?
And right at this present time, you know, with the research that we've done and all the footwork that we've gotten so far, is it's around a $25,000 per person entry fee. But in such, that covers a dry suit, provides you a sat phone, provides you a location transponder, provides you a handheld VHF radio. It also pays for all the fuel. It pays for all your logistics to get your watercraft from Iliamna back to Anchorage. It covers a small administration fee to be able to put the race on itself. It also includes the monies that needs to go into the entry fee or into the prize fund to cover the prize fund.
Hmm.
So, and then there's I have it all listed out on my website at wetdograce.com as far as what the entry fee covers. So
yeah, I read about
all,
that.
All detailed out there.
And it covers fuel, which is a pretty pricey item that people will need. And you'll be bringing fuel to these remote locations, and you have to buy the fuel way in advance, according to your website.
Yes. That's what speaking with Crowley, who delivers most of the fuel to these villages, that's what they had told me, is that in order to, you know, make sure you have enough fuel in these different locations, and you have to order it and place the order and have it delivered a year before the race actually takes place, because they don't normally deliver that much extra fuel to these places, and you just, you know, and they don't deliver it all the time. A lot of these towns, you only get to them once a year, and that's so and we would intend to have our race before they actually had their delivery dates for the fuel.
Now, what happens if someone's machine breaks down far, far away from civilization? How are they going to deal with it? I mean, you may have someone who's very experienced, knows how to make very detailed repairs, knows a lot about these machines, but still, if they need a particular part from the manufacturer, they're going to be way out of luck. How are they going to deal with that?
Well, the plan is, of course, is it's a team race. You have a race partner that's with you. Should one partner break down in the race, then his partner would hook onto him and tow him to the nearest checkpoint. If they both break down, we have slated for 110 support boats throughout the whole course, positioned in different places along the course, that should both racers need assistance, they can call on the VHF radio, and the support boat can come to them and hook onto them and tow them to the next checkpoint.
Wow.
Take care of them.
Now
so that's also the other thing that the entry fee covers. It also covers, based on everybody there, there's like $1,000 per person that's put in, or $1 million slated to help pay for these support boats that are positioned throughout the course.
Now, you also on your website talk about the need to have kind of a slush fund for a Coast Guard rescue operation. The Coast Guard, I presume, charges for rescues that they have to conduct?
No, they do not charge, but that's what I call is just a rescue bond. It might not necessarily be for the Coast Guard, but it's should we have to pay above and beyond what we would expect to, then we would have that. But that money, that rescue bond money, is just like would be refunded to them if we didn't end up using it. It would get paid back to the racers at the end of the race.
Are there any special laws that you have to comply with in setting up this race?
There are a lot of fish and game, all the boating type laws where like sea lion rookeries and sea otters, critical habitat areas, and there's special rules and things that we have to comply with in order to put on this event. And as such, we would be having classes before the race comes on that all the racers would go through to make them aware of different areas that are sea lion rookeries or haulouts that they have to avoid by over 3 miles. And then some of these national wildlife refuges or maritime refuge places that they have to avoid by the boundary laws and things like that.
What about the state? Have they expressed any opinion on this race? Have they said, oh, this is too dangerous, we want to see it go in a different direction? Are they saying anything?
Haven't heard anything to that degree yet, no.
To have a race that has...
I had spoke with the Coast Guard about it and asked them, I said, hey, I want to pull my permit for this, because the Coast Guard said we would pull a permit from them when we had the race so that they could announce to all their stations across the state and across the course that there could be activity coming down and they could be like kind of on alert for it. But he said this, there was, when I asked, said, well, what about for us doing this paving the way, when I went down to talk to John Backus about that, he said that they were not requiring us to pull a permit because they didn't really see it as being that dangerous. We were skirting the coastline for most of the way. We had a support boat with us, and there was a large group of us together, so there was no permit necessary at that time.
Do you think this race is more about luck than skill? Because if your boat doesn't fail and you're able just to plow through each day on calm water, you just might win this thing.
That's certainly possible, Like, if you know how to read a GPS and you can navigate well and you are in pretty good physical shape, anybody could possibly win this.
So it's certainly...
Don't break down. There's two theories to win in this race. One of them, some people think that they're going to get on their boat and run wide open throttle and just have it pegged the whole time. And then the other theory is it's going to be the slow, steady person that's going to win it, because the people who ride wide open throttle will end up thrashing their machine and having to work on it, and all that extra time that they're spending in the checkpoints working on their machine goes against their time on the overall time of the race course. So if you keep your machine in good working order and you're slow, steady, but consistent, you'll probably beat the people who run wide open throttle, even even though they may beat you from checkpoint to checkpoint.
So am I correct, if you work on your machine at night, that counts against your time on the course?
Any time you spent working on your machine will count against your overall time for the race course, correct?
Wow. That is interesting. I wouldn't have ever thought that that would be taken into consideration or a penalty you would have to take, if you call it a penalty. Now you...
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that the Iron Dog is pretty much the same way. If you're working on your snow machine at that in that event, that time goes against you too. So,
how many people do you expect will actually enter this race?
Well, our goal is to have 500 teams, and I'd say we've already got over 400 people, which is potentially 400 teams already signed up, or as far as they haven't expressed a positive interest of saying, hey, when this thing goes, we're ready. So our goal is 500 teams, 1,000 racers.
Now, why are you organizing this race?
I can't hear you.
Sorry, is this a for-profit operation? Is that the reason you're organizing this race, or is there some other motive?
I would like to be able to make some money off of it, sure. But I think it's more for really wanting to show people what watercrafts are capable of, and this is an event that's going to do it.
Well, sounds good. When is the race going to be?
Our goal would be to hold it in May of 2011. And that's aggressive, but that's what we're shooting for.
And each of the communities where there'll be checkpoints, will you have staff in those communities?
We will be definitely looking at hiring people in these different communities as time, checkpoint managers and shuttle services and everything that, any kind of possible service that we're going to need, we'll be trying to hire all of that locally if we can.
Well, sounds great, John. Anything else you want to add?
Just kind of keep tuned to wetdograce.com, and we'll try to keep it updated as best we can. It was pretty tough when I was paving the way there, trying to get update, because most of these areas we didn't have access to any kind of internet whatsoever. So next time I'll have a webmaster on call that I can call and update, and they can get the thing updated. I just didn't have that option this time.
And your website is www.wetdograce.com, and people can go
correct
there and find out all the information that's pertinent to this race, including updates and so forth.
That is correct.
Well, thanks again for coming on and talking to me about this. Good luck.
Well, thank you, Cal. I appreciate it, and hopefully we'll see you in Sandpoint later on this summer.
Sounds good. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
That is Meet the People for a Tuesday morning. It is Tuesday, the 16th of June. I'm Cal Southerington. That was John Lang. He is the organizer and founder of the Alaskan Wet Dog Race. The race is going to happen hopefully in 2011, and it's going to be the longest personal watercraft endurance race in the world at more than 2,000 miles. Back now to the music right here on 8:30 a.m. KSDP. Join us for Meet the People again tomorrow at 11:30.